UEG Talks, gastroenterology to go. Welcome to our GI podcast. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agla, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational, hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We're happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. So today we're talking about leaving the playing field. Some of us are just warming up the bench, some are the MVPs, and some are leaving the game, or maybe switching the game itself. To see how the game is played, we're going to another corner of the world where the hobbits come from, New Zealand. And it is my utmost pleasure to introduce today's guest, a giant in the GI world, past president of UEG and famously shortest meetings host in the history, Professor Paul Fockets. Welcome to UEG Talks, Paul.
Thank you very much, Ekla. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're very, very happy to have you with us. So let's dive in to the world of GI. You have seen it all from early years as a resident to heading the departments and institutions. Everybody considers you to be wildly successful. So personally, on a small scale, what is success to you in medicine?
I think mostly it will be teamwork. I think where we have occasionally brilliant scientists, brilliant surgeons, brilliant endoscopists, as long as they are alone, they will not accomplish very much. Because I think typically, if you find something new, you have to share it to make it better. So I think teamwork is probably one of the most important things, I would say, for long-term success. Of course, you can have your brilliant invention, but if you want to bring it further, you need to work with many more people.
So the saying goes, you can walk faster alone, but you go farther together.
I agree completely.
Okay, and how do you measure success in medicine then? Is it H index? Your publishing? Is it the awards? What's for you personally success?
I think it's not the H index. Of course, the H index is fantastic, but it also depends very much in what kind of playing field, that's the thing you used, you are. So if you're in a very small playing field, then your H index will only very slowly grow because the impact factors are lower, etc. If you're in cardiology, maybe it goes much quicker. So don't look at the age index. So you've been active in research until you were 40. And then after 40, you do nothing. The age index keeps rising. So if I stop doing anything, the age index, because more people will reference me, so just by sitting back here, my age index will go. No, so I think success is publishing in good journals. There's a lot of relatively poor journals out there. You can get everything published. But if you can get something published in journals, which in your area, for us, it probably would be endoscopy and gastrointestinal endoscopy, published in those journals or even higher journals, that's probably a success because you have to publish because that's the test of whether you're really doing something.
Okay, but this is for academic career. And what about if you're just focusing on clinical work? I thought, like, what kind of doctor would I want? For me, the measurement is like my good colleagues would refer their families and friends to me clinically. And for you?
Yeah, completely agree. I think that is very important. If people don't know to find you anymore, then maybe you're the brilliant researcher, or you don't see patients anymore. I think even when you're a very good clinician, you can still participate in research. So in an academic hospital, it's relatively easy, or it should be easy, and you actually should do research. But just in a big or small hospital close by, like the Netherlands is a good example, we do a lot of pancreatitis research with close to the entire country. And these are not brilliant researchers, but they participate, and we meet occasionally, and they make sure that they include patients. So yeah, the success of the pancreatitis working group, which I was referring to, is not Marco Bruno or whatever. It's the entire team. Mostly there's like 30, 40 authors, and all 30, 40 are important.
Yeah, you do have famously very good system to include relatively small country as an entire cohort in your research.
Yeah. You know the secret?
Teamwork?
So the secret is that Netherlands is relatively easy to reach everyone. So what we do is the pancreatic research group, since 20 years, we meet maybe every second or third month in Utrecht. And Utrecht is central in the Netherlands. And by train, you can come from the north, from the south, from the west and the east, that's closer by, within 2 hours, you're in Utrecht. So those working group meetings are just a lot of fun. We discuss some new studies, we meet each other, we have something to eat, and that's it again. And I think the country and the perfect railway system, etc., and everyone can just on a Wednesday evening come together easily, that's probably one of the secrets.
And also, does it require losing a bit of your ego to be in such a huge team? Just a part, not the first, not the last, but just a part of the team.
Yeah, that probably fits quite well with the Dutch people. Don't stick your head too high up because that's not good.
Okay, so very egalitarian in your country.
Yeah, maybe it's more respectful to everyone that participates. So clearly the people that invent or that really initiate the big studies, and maybe they are a little bit higher than that, but they couldn't do it without. So yeah, a little bit egalitarian as well.
So again, coming back to teamwork and good railways, this will be an example for other countries. If you want to do as the Dutch, have good trains and treat everybody with respect.
Yeah, and densely populated areas are also easier because we have a lot of patients. We have 18 or 19 million people living in this small country.
So good circumstances as well, then.
Yep.
Okay, so we know what success is for you. And what do you think was your personal road to success? What led to this? Is it personality, determination, or even some being at the right place at the right time?
Yeah, I think being at the right place at the right time is also important. It's not the most vital part. And the other thing is going to the right place on the right time. So if you are interested in research, let's keep the pancreatitis group as go to those meetings. Maybe your hospital doesn't include patients right now, but you're interested. Go and search for something. Don't go immediately searching for something very big. Don't expect to be a well-known person within a short time, but go because you can contribute.
And also learn in the process.
Yep.
If you're just starting.
And you meet, the atmosphere is usually good. So if you have a group of closely cooperating people, it's nice to be there. And you share some personal things as well. So yeah, go and find something. Don't wait until it comes to you, because that's a little bit too easy. And spend some extra time. So if you're very busy with your work week and that's enough, that's fine as well. But if you have other ambitions, try to push yourself a little bit and start looking around.
All right, so here comes the social skills to your success.
Yeah.
Because you have to socialize, to search.
Yeah, but it's actually not true, because I know a couple of people that I think maybe they're not the most contact ready, etc. But still, they come up with smart ideas, and if you're in a big group, they will get the respect, because we find out that these are the people actually are very smart, and whatever they say, they may not speak much, but whenever they say something, you better watch it.
Well, that's a great point. So there's a way for everybody. Just go do it, and something will happen for you.
If you want it, if you're curious, so if you say, okay, what will be next? If I look back 20 or even 30 years, then many things 30 years ago, we would have never predicted that actually it would become mainstream. If you look at US-guided bile duct drainage, which now suddenly, because of more of a technical Ken Binmiller's invention of the axial stent, suddenly it's becoming mainstream. And 10 years ago, the stent was available, but we didn't think it worked. And there was a small change in the design of that stent that suddenly made it ready for mainstream.
Eureka moment?
Yeah. People like Ken Binmiller, just as an example, has always been technically very interested. Maybe we have some people that like to do multi-center research. We also need really, really inventors that work together with not pharma, but medical device companies, and say, well, why don't we do this, that, et cetera. Develop a new guide wire, develop a new stent, et cetera. The big companies all have expert panels that advise them.
Also, someone's personal success in medicine also could depend on the boss. If the boss sees your potential and possibly guides you to the area that you are most gifted or have the most capabilities.
Yeah, that's true. Guido Tietgat, I think famous and still a very, very, very smart guy, even though he's well in the 80s. He already was quite famous 30 years ago, because he always asked the students and the youngest fellows to be involved in the discussions. So it was not like there was the other system, there is a professor here somewhere, and then everyone has to come down, and the student will sit somewhere in the corner here. And he was always asking everyone to participate. And I think that's important. And hierarchy can be very limiting to having young people with brilliant ideas to speak up.
It's very nice to hear you advocating for the importance of young GIs, especially coming from very hierarchical structure from my home country.
Yeah. You can't change that overnight. But in the end, most people will realize that at one point you need a team. Nowadays, that 30 years ago, you could write a retrospective case series of 7 patients that you'd seen and you place a stent in. And right now, no journal, even the worst journal, would not even accept it anymore. So you have to do it together. You have to do it prospectively. You need your ethics committee approval, etc. So it's you can't do it all alone.
Okay, so we're clear on the teamwork. And could we come to a smaller team, a duo, dynamic duo of mentor and mentee? Because medicine is, in a way, is a craftsmanship passed from a master to an apprentice, especially in endoscopy. What do you appreciate in this relationship and what do you expect in a successful one?
Well, one of the things you expect from both sides is respect. So if I would train someone, then I would expect from that person that he would be prepared when we go doing new procedures, etc., read something, asks things, etc. So that's one thing. What I should be able to give and what I should give is actually teaching, but also teaching is not by, okay, I'll give you the endoscope for 10 minutes and you can try, and if after that I'll take it and I'll finish the case. It's giving, especially in the current procedures, relatively long and multi-step, you can teach one of the small steps to in every procedure, but you can also teach maybe a couple of steps. So take ERCP as an advantage. You can say, well, if you're very young, put the scope in front of the papilla. That's step one. And then get a nice position. Maybe you cannot do cannulation yet, but once we have done a sphincterotomy and there are stones, pulling a balloon down is technically not so difficult. So you can divide any procedure in small steps. And it doesn't mean that you have to learn all the steps in the order they're done in the procedure, but you can also say, well, just feel a little bit how it is to pull a balloon through. It will, the enthusiasm of the trainee will be much higher because he's actually pulled a stone out. Yeah, I think there's a lot of different stuff. Yeah.
It just got me thinking. I've read from neurosurgeons Henry Marsh that it was particularly difficult for him to train and assess risk with his trainees, especially if he liked them, because you have a lot of responsibility for the patient who's on your table currently, but also for all the future patients who will come to your apprentice. Do you find it difficult?
No, maybe it's different with neurosurgery. It's slightly different. But, pancreatitis as a complication of ERCP, that's why typically, why don't you teach someone use a balloon and all those things, and they'll become much more confident with actually working with the endoscope. And maybe cannulation should not be during the first 10 or 20 cases, but only when you have done some primary work already. So that's one of the options, I think. But you have to be careful. And the other thing is, when I stop working and I get a gallstone problem, cholangitis, I need someone well-trained. So I'd better start training the younger generation.
So it's self-preservation for you?
A little bit more than that, but yeah, true.
Okay, so you had a robust career from active clinical duties to academic heights and vast other engagements, especially in UG. How did you juggle it? How did you set your priorities and remain sane through this?
I think I'm pretty lucky because I can work quite hard without being overworked, etc. So not everyone has the same ability, I think. What I always did a lot is running or cycling, etc., actually to stay sane. That's probably one of the things. And as long as it's interesting and it's nice and it's new, I think I was always interested. So then you run the extra mile. And of course, you need to juggle it also with family life, etc. So you have to listen. Actually, when COVID hit and I was suddenly not traveling anymore, it was kind of an eye-opener. Like, I thought I didn't travel that much, but then my wife told me that I actually did travel much and that she enjoyed. She didn't complain about the other times before because we kind of left it. But many people during COVID had suddenly kind of a new insight. So I reduced traveling. And I think maybe more important, the world started traveling less. And we do more and more of our meetings now digitally, which actually also works quite well. We always thought that we had to go to Brazil and et cetera and be there. But you can many do things semi-live, online, et cetera. So I think we learned a lot. I learned a lot during COVID.
But also, we're losing the personal touch in this. Part of those other activities that you put volunteer work hours apart from your family, they have to have some benefits from you. I mean, some joy besides the project itself. So going to Brazil is quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice, but it's not very green. So I think I have a bad track record. Well, actually, South America is a nice example, because typically when you're invited to South America, they usually give you like 6, 7, or 8 lectures. So they take full advantage. And there are some other meetings where maybe there's a faculty of 30 or 40 people that all do one case. And I think it's probably better if you have someone fly over, use that person a little bit more than just being there in a large group of hotshots.
So you started a bit with how you deal with stress, with being overwhelmed, cycling, jogging. But actually, what sustained you through the years? Dealing with burnout, devastating loss, tragedies that are all around us. What got you through this?
I think, as I said before, I'm probably lucky. I didn't have too many problems myself. I had no serious illnesses, etc. I think you can, as a chair of the department, you can mean quite a lot for the whole department if you're careful in trying to assist people that actually go through tougher times. But when people have bad complications and actually feel quite bad, I think it's the human part, the teamwork, whether it's with the nurses, the fellows, etc. Make sure that you really have a team that's working together. Within that team, there should be respect for everyone, for the youngest nurse, maybe the person that actually has a problem with, maybe breaks a leg or has another injury and cannot work for a couple of months. Keep the group together and make sure that in times of big trouble, big complications, or big personal things, that you keep that group together. And we had quite a large unit in Amsterdam, and still investing that, it was a very nice role you could take, because you would know that once you gave that extra attention and assist people, etc., that radiates to the entire group. It's the feeling of a big group still being kind of one family, I think, is quite important.
So all across these questions that we've gone through, always at the center is the person next to you, the team, be it academia, be it hard times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the person next to you, one of the things is interesting, because what's happening and what also happened in my career is that at one point I thought, okay, and that just happened. So I thought after 10 years in as a chair, you probably need to make place for someone else. Because when you start as a new head of the department, you're full of energy, new ideas. After 7, 8 years, you know how things go. People know what you will do, what you will respond, etc. So ideally, you would go after 10 years, maybe 7 years or even 5 years, change it. Don't make it this position that will be always until you're 65 or 67 years old in one person. And when I went to the CEO of my hospital for the first time and said, well, I'll probably want to step back as chair of the department in 2, 3 years, the reaction was, no, but you're doing very well, so let's continue. And now, after like 5 years of all kind of discussions in different areas, I think now it's kind of accepted that you will do it 5 years and you can do it another 5 years. But after 10 years, you will not be the head of the department anymore, because it's time to go on. And it's time to, and what you also make sure in that kind of 5 or 5 years is that people are still active in research. They're still active in teaching, clinical work, because when they're maybe 55 years old, the 10 years is over, maybe 60 years old, then there's still a serious number of years where they will just be one of the department members. And I think that's a very healthy development.
Thank you. We have stumbled to something very, very peculiar, leaving the actual field. Because I guess for a lot of people, medicine becomes part of the identity, being a doctor, a teacher, sometimes being a boss. And it is not often that we see senior colleagues leave the positions that they're in with huge enthusiasm. So I guess part of your decision to leave was that just that's time for a new challenge, a change?
Yeah, I think mostly it was time for the department to have a new leader. I think that really is important. And of course, it looks nice because now I moved to New Zealand. So I'm still escaping the black hole. But when I land, so I'll work here until February 1st, 2026. And then I fly home to Amsterdam and then there is a big, big, big black hole. So we'll see what I'll do then.
Is it terrifying or exciting? Anything can happen.
Yeah, it's a nice preparation, this. So you have to be a little bit inventive and think what you'll do. I will not do colonoscopies until I'm 80 years old. Quite a lot of people still do that a couple of years. I respect that completely, but I think you have to do a volume. That's number one. So you cannot do like three colonoscopies every week. You should probably do at least one or two full days. And the second thing is, when you are maybe at 67, you're still very, very, everything is still okay. But at 77, some things will be going slower. Maybe you miss a few polyps, etc. So I think there is a certain age where probably we should step down and try to do other significant work.
Okay, so other horizons for you, maybe not colonoscopy, but something very exciting.
Yeah, I have no clue at it right now, and we'll see.
It's a bit weird to coming from the past president of UUG. This is something like a junior GI would say, I don't know what to do. And now you're the same path.
But that's everyone that retires. And I've seen a lot of people and a lot of friends that suddenly kind of, okay, am I useless now? Should I start golfing? Should I actually start doing the vacuum cleaning in the house? It will be a challenge, definitely. But yeah, I think if you have an open mind, you can find something. And there's many areas where we need volunteers. I think one of the things in endoscopy is that you have a lot of technical things. I like to repair things. If the vacuum cleaner breaks down, I'll just rip it completely apart and just screw it together again. That's fun. And nowadays on YouTube, you can find movies of everything. So if your bicycle needs maintenance, I think many gastroenterologists have some technical skills in their hands. So I think repairing your bicycle is a good start.
Whichever way you go, I guess it will be very exciting.
Yeah, I hope so. And you need to be lucky, of course, as well, because not everyone will become 85 in good health. So you can also run into disease, etc. So it's also a time to consider that. And if you still have that big plan to go to Antarctica or wherever, you should probably not wait until you're 75, because then you definitely will not go anymore.
Just small secret of yours. Why New Zealand? Is it The Hobbits?
I read The Hobbit many, many years ago, the book of Tolkien, etc. No, actually, I was here in 2015 and I was traveling here for the New Zealand Society of Gastroenterology. And they invited me to teach them poems. So I spent 3 days in the hospital I work now. So we kept in contact, but not very seriously. And then at one point in 2022, I got an email from a guy from New Zealand, said whether he could visit Amsterdam. And at the lower end of that email, there was a logo saying, working in New Zealand, visit kiwihealth.org. And for some reason, I clicked on that logo, but there was not a job for a 65-year-old doctor. There were nurses. New Zealand has a shortage of nurses, doctors, etc. So they're always looking for new doctors, but then usually from 40 or maximally 40 or 45 years old. But I got into contact and we discussed the options. And so right now I'm the locum guy. So whenever one of them goes on sabbatical, then I take care of this person. And that's how we fill 2 years. So that's a little bit of lucky coincidence.
Okay, so being at the right place at the right time with the right logo.
Yep. I still have the email and I still know the guy who sent it. So I was running around with this in my head, working in New Zealand. After 1 week, I talked to my wife. I said, I have to talk to you because I have a crazy idea. And 3 minutes later, she said, well, why don't we do that? So that was the quickest decision we've taken, I think.
Also, the person next to you is of the utmost importance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's a conference organizer. She works from, it's a big international company she works for. And so she can actually pick up her laptop and work anywhere. If she wouldn't be able to work, I think New Zealand is very nice, but it's also relatively small. So if she would be here just doing shopping and cooking, etc., I don't think it would work.
Visiting the Shire.
Yep.
Somehow we have to wrap up all this journey and also all the things that will come up. And I was wondering, what's the best advice that you were ever given or you have given to anyone?
Yeah, it's kind of in between. I was given it some way when I do give it. What I heard from a guy in Tanzania when I met him, we were on a leadership course, and he said, I always, every day from 1 to 2 p.m., I just walked through the hospital. So it was a relatively big hospital, a lot of patients, also a lot of private patients, could be one of the reasons. But his calendar was free from 1 to 2. So he could either, if there was nothing urgent, he could just go walk and through the ward. So he was a very visible CEO of that hospital. And I think what he actually did, he wasted some time. So he could have probably have had like two or three important meetings between 1 and 2. But he said, no, I want free time. And I think one of the advices I would give is to waste a little bit of time. So spend 10 or 15 minutes drinking coffee with the nurses. Well, maybe on the other hand, you could also write something or have other things or prepare your clinic from tomorrow. But drink coffee with someone. Go to the people you don't very often see. So we have a quite big basic lab. I'm definitely not a basic lab person. But walk into the lab when there is a meeting. Don't ask them to come to you, but walk to that lab. So waste some time, maybe every day 15 minutes or maybe only once or twice a week. But really go to someone that you just talk to for 10 or 15 minutes. I think it's important for those people because the people will enjoy it very much or be surprised that you actually go to them. So waste some time. Don't always try to be 100% effective, because I think in those small moments with some other people, you get new ideas, you get people, maybe you just stimulate people doing things. So yeah, waste a little bit of time, of your precious time.
But still, waste your time with the next person to you, the most important thing.
Yep, also waste time there as well. Maybe you come home and you say, oh, tonight I'm going to write this article, but actually this is not a good night. And maybe you were a little bit grumpy yesterday, and maybe he or she is also a bit grumpy. Come on, sit down, have a drink, have a dinner, have a good talk, and don't work. That's also nothing wrong with that.
Okay, Paul, thank you so, so much for all your insights, for sharing your journey, your perspectives. And actually, I would really love to repeat this in 5 years and to see what has come of your black hole. What do you think? Could we agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think 5 years could be long, but we'll see. No, it's fine.
All right, 2026, right?
Yeah, sure. But that's less than 5 years. Okay. Yeah, maybe 27.
Okay, then it's a done deal?
Yeah, done deal.
Okay, we're shaking hands in the presence of the audience. Thank you so, so much for sharing your insights. Thank you, the audience, for listening. And please do remember to tune in for UEG Journal podcast, the upcoming episodes. And we'll see you in the next one. See you.
Thanks very much, Egla. See you.